Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and in our audio program this month, we're going to ask a question. Are you a doer or a feeler? And this is an important question. I'm not talking about your permanent personality that goes on and on and all kinds of pervasive permanent patterns in your world, because I don't believe in that. I'm talking about in this moment. Are you a doer or a feeler? Or with this issue, are you a doer or a feeler? Let me give you an example. So you wake up in the morning and you're thinking about going to the health club. Maybe you even have a schedule where you've put it on your New Year's resolution to go to the health club 3 times a week. And so now 2 days have gone by, so this is your day to go to the club. What do you do? Do you check in with your feelings and find out if you feel like going? Now, if you do that, you are a feeler. That's your primary way of operation, at least for this issue called the health club. But what's beautiful about this, and what's beautiful about the whole idea of reinventing yourself, is it doesn't have to be that way if you don't want to choose that as a way of operating. In other words, you could actually be a doer rather than a feeler, and it would be up to you. So, for example, you could have it on your calendar, 8 a.m., health club, and you would simply do that. And it wouldn't matter how you felt. You might feel a little tired. You might have been up all night last night working on something. You might feel a cold coming on. You don't care. It's on the calendar, and you do it. And you check in with your feelings after you've done what you've done, not before. So if that's how you do this, if that's how you operate, then in this instance, in this issue called the health club, you are a doer. You do it first and feel afterwards. People don't always know they have that option. So that's what the audio program is going to be about today. It's going to be about that choice that we all have between being a doer and being a feeler. Now, one of the things I do for people in my club and people in my world, clients of mine, I send them a daily message. And the message is short. It comes via email. Some people get it on their phone. Some people get it on their computer. And they read it every day. And it reconnects them to the real options, freedom, and choices they have in the world. Because we forget that. And it really reconnects them to whether they want to be a doer or a feeler. So a while back, I sent to the members of my group a written message. And I usually don't like to read something on my audio programs because I hate it when I hear something on audio or even something on the radio that I can tell is being read by somebody. It's never as authentic. But I'm going to do it anyway, because I want you to hear exactly what this message was that I sent out. So I'm going to read it as if I've just received this on my email, on my screen, on my phone, wherever. And here's what it said. Pretend I'm waking up in the morning and I'm reading this. Professional people fall into two categories. There are doers and there are feelers. Doers do what needs to be done to reach a goal that they themselves have set. They come to work having planned out what needs to be done. Feelers, on the other hand, do what they feel like doing. Feelers take their emotional temperature throughout the day, checking in on themselves, figuring out what they feel like doing right now. Their lives, their outcomes, their financial security are all dictated by the fluctuation of their feelings. Their feelings will change constantly, of course, so it's hard for a feeler to follow anything through to a successful conclusion. Feelings are changed by many things: biorhythms, gastric upset, too strong a cup of coffee, an annoying call from home, a rude waitress at lunch, a cold, a bit of constipation. Those are the dictating forces, the commanders of a feeler's life. A doer already knows in advance how much time will be spent on the phone, how much in the field, what clients will be cultivated today, what relationships will be strengthened, what communications need to be made. A doer uses a three-step system to guaranteed success. 1, they figure out what they want to achieve. 2, they figure out what needs to be done to achieve it. And 3, they just do it. This is not a theory. This is the actual, measured, and observed system used by all super achievers without fail. Whether you are a doer or a feeler has nothing to do with your character or personality. It has everything to do with choice. Choice is the key to it. You can choose either one at any time, in any situation. So today, as you are challenged by situations, be sure to ask yourself, what can I do about this? Instead of, how do I feel about this? You'll be very pleased with the day that you have. Well, believe it or not, after I sent that message out, I received a lot of angry responses. I had people who responded to me and said, are you telling me not to be aware of how I feel? Are you telling me the opposite of what my therapist has told me, and that is to understand my feelings, to know where they come from, to check in with my feelings at all times, to talk about how I feel? Are you telling me not to go up to everyone in my life and say, what you did made me feel a certain way? Because I've been trained to do that. I've been taught to do that. I've been taught that my feelings are primary. They are what run me. They're the most important thing in my life. Even when I was a child, my guardians, my parents, they would always ask me, do you feel like this, honey? Do you feel like cereal? Would you rather have eggs? Do you feel like going to the movies? Would you feel like going to Disneyland right now? Do you feel like going to bed, sweetheart? Or do you not? So feelings all my life have been the most important thing for me. Now you're telling me they don't matter. This is really confusing to me. I depend on your messages to inspire me and lift me up. Usually they do. But now it's only confusing me and trying to undo a whole life of trying to understand my feelings and all the time I've put into that, all the therapy I've done, all the groups I've been in where we talk about our feelings. And so what are you doing to me? Why are you doing this? This just sounds like some kind of brutal neo-Nazi shallow way of getting me to do things and be more productive so I can pay you more money in the long run. What's going on here? Anyway, I'm kind of summarizing the tone and the content of a lot of the feedback I got when I talked about choosing to be a doer rather than a feeler. It's really not about pretending you don't have feelings, but it is about understanding how the whole human system works. This is mind, body, spirit at play. That's our system. If you leave any one part of that out, your system is going to go into decline. It's going to be dysfunctional, especially the body. Now, so many people leave the body out of the system. In other words, they think that the body will get up and move. It will go talk to somebody, or it will go take a walk or a swim or a run or a cycling vacation or something. Only when and only after the mind and spirit are in the right place. And what that leaves out is the fact that the body is the best inspiration for the other two components. It is the thing that ought to be leading the way every day, not the thing that later comes along when the stars are aligned, but the thing that leads the way. When William James said that we're not singing because we're happy. We're happy because we're singing. He got this whole thing about being a doer exactly right. We're not singing because we're happy. We're happy because we're singing. So, for example, all the religions understand this. All the religions have you chanting or singing or doing something, and you don't wait until you feel like it. the minister or the priest or the leader of the congregation does not say, well, when you feel like singing, when you feel like a song is coming on, please raise your left hand. And if we have enough people voting to sing, I'll signal the choir. And if the choir, only if the choir feels like singing, we will sing. Well, that would be absurd. But we ourselves lead our lives that way. In other words, if we went into church and we heard the minister say that, we would think, this is crazy. He's trying to illustrate something insane. He's being very funny, isn't he? This can't really be how a service is run, that we only sing when we feel like it. That wouldn't work. It wouldn't be enlightening. It wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be uplifting. And you'd be right to say that, because what's uplifting is to sing on command, to just sing, to simply sing, and not wait until I feel like singing. Because the singing causes the feeling of feeling like singing. Many people who run report back about runner's high. They report back about what it's like to go on a run. Boy, I didn't feel like running today. Oh my gosh, the last thing I felt like doing, I had a headache, my joints were sore, the weather looked bad, I looked at the sidewalks, they were a little icy, and I thought, oh my gosh, it's dangerous out there. Not only cold, it's dangerous. And so runners say, yet I laced up my shoes, yet I put on my sweatshirt, yet I just run. I just run anyway. And so when I'm out there and running, 5 minutes in, my body and my mind are all saying, boy, this was a mistake. Why did I do this? I should have stayed home. Should have stayed in bed. The body needs rest. It needs to recover. What am I doing out running? 10 minutes in, well, I was feeling a little better. I'm starting to limber up. I'm actually 15 minutes in. Hey, this is kind of fun. I'm glad I did this today. 20 minutes in, I'm exhilarated. I'm higher than a kite. I'm getting all these good ideas. Life looks great. I'm feeling full of energy and excitement. I'm so glad I did this. I'm so glad I pushed through my resistance to this. Now, it's really interesting here that what we're talking about is how feelings produce resistance to doing what we want to do in life. That's the problem with being a feeler. That's the problem with checking in with whether I feel like doing something. Now, there are people that I work with who are authors, and they have something that they think of as writer's block. And they say, well, you know, I'm writing a book, but it's not going very well. I don't feel like writing, or I'm stuck. I'm struggling. I don't know what to write next. I've been kind of hung up on chapter 5. And I haven't written for a long time, so I'm feeling bad about myself. I don't know what to do. I found a therapist who's really specializing in writer's block. I might go to him. And so when I work with people who have a version of writer's block, whether it's writing, painting, selling, anything in their lives that they find they're not doing because they don't feel enough like doing it yet, my prescription is really simple. Do this thing called writing like you would paint a room. I mean, if you were painting a room in your home, would you wait for inspiration? Would you see if you felt like it? Or would you say, you know what, Saturday morning I'm going to paint that room and Sunday I'll finish it. So Saturday morning I'm going to get up and have breakfast and go for a run and come back and Friday I will buy all the materials, the paint, the roller, and so Saturday is my day to paint. And so Saturday comes along, and I wake up, and it's my day to paint, and so I'm painting. I've got music on. I might be having fun. I might not be having fun. Doesn't matter. It's my day to paint. So when I work with writers, I have them set aside a time that's their time to write. So if 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. is your time to write, that's your time to write. Whether you feel like writing or not, whether what you write is bad writing or good writing, doesn't matter. Just write. And once they get into that, doing rather than feeling, all of a sudden, they might write for the first 20 minutes and it might look horrible and this writing will never end up in the book and why am I doing this? But all of a sudden, something starts to kick in and the writing starts to flow and they're glad they did it. That happens with everything. Doers do what needs to be done. Feelers put it off. Years ago, one of the most successful people of all time, one of the great insurance salespeople and motivators of other salespeople, was W. Clement Stone. And one thing that he would do with his people in the morning, he'd gather his team together, and they would repeat over and over the phrase, "Do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now, do it now." And he believed that by repeating that phrase again and again and again, do it now, that it would actually put inside the system, the subconscious mind of his salespeople, a real urge, a little command in there, a voice that would actually keep repeating, like, you know how you get a song in your head and it just keeps coming up, I can't get that song out of my mind. He wanted them to get that phrase on the jingle track, whatever that is in the mind that repeats and repeats, he wanted that phrase to be in there. So if it occurred to them to contact someone in a business, they think, oh, I should contact him. He would be really good. He would turn me on to some referrals. That the little voice would then say, do it now. Because the voice would say, do it now, they'd pick up the phone, they'd contact that person right now. And then something would happen and life would move right along. This was the ultimate cure for procrastination, and the ultimate driver of high productivity would be to do things now and to have something that you want to do and have it be something that you do right now. That was the motivator he used. There was another example of this. And it was brutal, politically incorrect, and I get in trouble every time I bring it up. So why not bring it up then? Good, here it comes. I was reading my favorite British philosopher, Colin Wilson, and he was talking about psychology and Abraham Maslow and how the mind works. And he was talking about depression. And I know depression is kind of a sacred field now, and people have specific drugs for it, and family members who have encountered it and all that. So I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And what he said was brutal and insensitive, but he was making a point. He was trying to make a point. And he said the ultimate cure for depression, if you have someone in your world who is depressed, is to throw them down a flight of stairs. When they get to the bottom of the stairs, they will no longer be depressed. Now, there'll be something, and it probably won't be positive, but it won't be depression that you see. The depression will be gone. Now, here's the point that he's trying to make, not to belittle depression. He's trying to return people to the power of taking some kind of physical action. Let me give you another example of it. I've said this before in my live seminars, and some of the audio recordings we have available tell this story. But stories are meant to be told again and again. So like W. Clement Stone, they get into you and they become part of you, like part of your metabolism, and you can operate from this story instead of having it just be, oh, I've heard that story. Never mind, I've heard it. Click, I'm out, I've heard it. It's not like that. I don't mind repeating it because I'd rather have you be bored with it, you know it so well, than have some kind of cards held up like, oh, he gets an aid, all fresh material. I don't care about that. I care about making a difference with people. So I'll repeat this story because once you really get the point of this story, it makes a big difference in your world, in your life. Especially on the subject of, am I going to be a doer or am I going to be a feeler? Am I going to do the thing I wish I was doing? Or am I going to see if I feel like it? Am I going to check in with my feelings and ask myself, you know, do I really feel like doing that right now? I don't know. Wait a minute. No. Yes. I don't. Let me wait. I want to wait until I feel like it, because it is never authentic if you don't really feel like it. I don't want to be inauthentic, so I'll wait. Maybe tomorrow. I have identified the process of the thinking of the feeler. Now, the doer just does it. It's being done the moment it's thought of. Instead of checking in with the feeling comes later, and the feeling's usually really good. So here's the story I'm willing to repeat. In many a Zen monastery, the head monk would have this exercise with the other younger rookie monks that he would call the laughing meditation. And the laughing meditation was basically this. The head monk would walk around with a switch, which was a branch peeled, painful when the branch came across your face or across your back. And he would walk among the monks who were sitting on the floor, and he would say, "Now, we are going to have the laughing meditation. Here's how it works. When I ring the Tibetan bell, everyone starts laughing. And keep laughing until I ring the bell again. That is the laughing meditation." So what would happen is, he would ring the bell, and all the monks would start laughing. And he would walk among them with this little thin switch. In case they weren't laughing, they'd pay for it. They'd laugh, and you know they'd be laughing artificially. At first, it would be like laughing on command. It wouldn't be a spontaneous, real laugh from any of them. And it would be fake laughing. But the fake laughing was kind of funny by itself, and pretty soon people were laughing at how others were laughing, and after a while, the laughing was real, and it sort of swept through like a brush fire or a contagious thing, and everybody was now laughing. Those of you who've had kids or been a kid, I think that would be everybody, have seen this phenomenon at the dinner table, especially if laughter is forbidden. And one of the kids starts giggling. Okay, what's going on? Come on, we're at the dinner table. Please, no laughing. And then pretty soon everyone else is laughing. So it's contagious. So these monks are laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing, and then he rings the bell and they stop. What he wants them to see is that they are happy now because they are laughing. They are not laughing because they are happy. They are happy because they were laughing. What he wants them to see is how much control they really do have over what they feel in life. How much control they really do have over their state, their emotional state, that they can put themselves in whatever emotional state is most useful to them at the time. And he wants them to understand that and through this exercise, experience it. So they're not just understanding it intellectually. And when coaches work with their clients, the client might have read a book in which he really grasps and understands the theory of how great it is to actually get yourself into action and do something and take action now. And take a small step, dream big, and take a small step toward that dream. They get the point of it. They get the theory. But do they experience the value of it? That's the most important thing that a coach or a mentor or a parent can do with a client or a child or someone who's working for you, is to allow them to have the experience of what it's like to be a doer rather than a feeler. So please make 5 calls and call me back. Please do this and call me back. Do that and call me. Do this and email me. Because I want you doing it. I want you to experience. So I want you to laugh and then tell me how you feel. I want you to be a doer and not a feeler.